That was track number 10 from the album Lines Build Walls by Aaron Starks from Magnatune.com.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, all Guy James Show listeners. Very, very happy to have all of you along this afternoon. I see that there are quite a few people up on the stream already, and we're glad to have you along with us today on this day after Memorial Day. I hope you had a great Memorial Day, those of you that were absent from the show yesterday, and I know there were some of you who were out doing the right thing, out visiting cemeteries and planting flags and paying your respects and going to parades and so forth. And if you weren't here yesterday, we talked about Memorial Day all day long yesterday and did our tributes and paid our respects as well. So it was a great Memorial Day around here, and I hope it was where you are as well. We have an interesting program for you today coming up in a little while, around 3:30-ish. Professor Paul Campos from the University of Colorado at Boulder is going to be with us. He's on the law faculty there, and we're going to talk about this business of the rich and poor gap widening, and I think there are many of us who not only know all about that, we are experiencing it every single day. So it's going to be interesting to have what he says. He writes a weekly column, by the way, for the Rocky Mountain News in Denver, and a very astute gentleman, and I know you'll enjoy hearing from him just coming up a little later on today. Big news today. I think it was big news, and it's interesting to see if you agree with me. And by the way, you can give us a call here at the show, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Be glad to have you join in on the program today. I did come across the line a couple of hours ago, actually more than that, about 4 or 5 hours ago, that the Supreme Court on Tuesday made it harder for government employees to file lawsuits claiming they were retaliated against for going public with allegations for official misconduct by a 5-4 vote. And guess who cast the deciding vote? It was one new Justice Samuel Alito. So it's working, is it not? They said the nation's 20 million public employees do not have carte blanche free speech rights to disclose government inner workings. So whistleblowing will come to an end as we know it. Justice Anthony Kennedy, writing for the court's majority, "Thank you so much, sir," said the First Amendment does not protect every statement a public employee makes in the course of doing his or her job. The decision came after the case was argued twice this term, once before Justice Sandra Day O'Connor retired in January, and then again after her successor, Alito, joined the bench. You know, it was William Shakespeare writing about Julius Caesar who made the famous statement, "The evil men do lives after them," and I believe the evil being done by the Bush administration and this court that they have tilted will continue for decades to come. It is now a young court. We can only hope that during these decades, our nation will not succumb to the evils these men have created and fight against it. We can only hope that good Americans will resist the tyranny like that of this ruling. History, in my opinion, will not be kind to men like these, but then again, it will have to most likely be the history of word of mouth, because no doubt our books will be censured, just like these government employees' voices have been censured. I do not question whatsoever that they will attempt to limit free speech at every opportunity, including the press, TV, radio, published books. It's a natural progression of what they're attempting to do right now. Mark my word. These people have been given an inch. They will take the mile. I promise you, they will. My goodness, we've got phone lines lit up already. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello, Guy.
Hi.
This is Jim. How you doing?
Hi, Jim.
Listen, I enjoy your show, and I just want to share a few things with you, if I may, please.
Sure.
I've worked in D.C., and I've worked for the federal government most of my life, and I worked for DOD. I worked at the Readiness Center at Andrews Air Force Base and the Pentagon, and, you know, I can understand to a certain extent the fact that you've got to, there's certain things you can't discuss outside the workplace, and I can support that to a certain extent, and I'm not sure exactly what's going on with this. But as far as federal employees seeking a redress, I mean, if they're a bargaining unit, they have certain redresses along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not, well, they don't. Now, what they've done with Homeland Security is to completely undermine or to try to undermine the rights that federal workers have under Title V. And, you know, they try to, basically make it easier to terminate a federal worker. Of course, then, you know, this has its root back when Clinton and Gore wanted to reinvent government. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Republicans really took that ball and ran with it. But, I mean, it was really Al Gore and Bill Clinton who started when they reinvented government, how ways they could fire people more easily and do away with federal agencies. As a matter of fact, they wanted to do away with the Corps of Engineers entirely. That was part of their program. So what I'm trying to say, my friend, is that there's a lot of blame to go on both sides of the aisle as far as the injuries done to the federal worker, because as far as I'm concerned, the federal employee is America's unsung hero.
Well, I do not agree with this court silencing people who may have a actual whistleblower case.
Well, if that's what this is about, the whistleblowing thing.
Yes, it is what it's about.
And about contracting violations and things of that
yes.
nature.
And, the government, seeking retribution against these people. And now why they're going to be, government will be protected and be able to come down hard on anybody that want to for blowing the whistle on illegalities and wasteful things within the government. And I think any government employee should be not only allowed to, but duty-bound to report anything going on that's illegal.
Well, it's a violation of ethics. But, you know, sir, I was looking in Time magazine, and they had gifts that were given to Bush and Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
And Bush received, let's see, around $17,000 worth of personal gifts, of which was a $5,900 bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And Cheney got $39,000 worth. He racked up, and he made, of course, off with a $6,500 Colt revolver.
Like these people really need gifts.
Well, I'll tell you, as far as Cheney is concerned, I know what in my book, and I wore the uniform of this country, and I'm proud of it. And, you know, back in the old days, when a person does certain things, they gave him a pistol and closed the door, and they let him take care of the problem himself, you know?
Right, right.
That's the way That's the way I feel sometimes.
Well, it seems like the richer you get in public life, the more gifts and gratuities you get from people. And I was reading the other night, I'm doing an extensive study on the Middle East right now and
right.
taking a college course on the history of our relations with the Middle East. And the Shah of Iran was so good at giving wonderful little gifts to Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon and so forth.
Oh, good Lord, yeah.
To curry favor with them, like they needed gifts. They're both, Johnson was a wealthy man. He didn't need gifts from the Shah. But just their way of ingratiating themselves with our public officials to stay in, you know, it's a sad situation.
Well, you know, and we wonder why our relationship with Iran are so bad, because our CIA went in there. Who was the guy they took out? He was popularly elected Milosevic.
Oh,
is that his name? And we installed the Shah.
Oh, I can't. I'm having trouble recalling his name right now.
It was Milosevic or someone like that. But we installed the Shy. Of course, he had the Savak, which was his secret police, which was just as bad as the Mukhabarat was under Saddam Hussein. You know, it was pretty repressive.
Yes, they were. And yet he dressed up in his beautiful white uniforms with his lovely wife beside him, and the American press and the American government made him look like just a wonderful guy.
Yeah, there's one more thing I want to share with you,
yes.
Okay? And I'm asking you a question here, and you seem like you have some sense. You know, I have, I'm of a fairly strong religious bent, and I've noticed that a lot of people on the left, the liberals particularly, enjoy attacking the church. And I'm not talking about Falwell, I'm not talking about Pat Robertson. I mean, these people, in my opinion, almost make fools of themselves and really act in such a way as they could be in the employ of the Democratic National Committee. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when they begin to attack, you know, the Pope and things like that, it really bothers me.
You mean employees of the Republican National Committee?
Well, I'm talking about some of these guys could be the way that they act. When Pat Robertson pulled that boner about killing Chavez, I mean, that was so stupid. He could have been in the pay of the Democratic National Committee to hurt their side. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying.
Well, if he hurt the Republicans on that, yeah, I see what you mean on that one. Okay, kind of a reverse psychology.
But, I mean, you know, the other night I was on some of the other talk show hosts on this network, and they were calling the Pope a Nazi and stuff like this. And I tried to tell them that, you know, in Germany, when Pope Benedict was a young man, everybody was in the Hitler Youth. And, you know, if you weren't, you were pressured into being in that.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was not a member of the Alemannia or the Waffen-SS. He was just a regular soldier who fought for his country. And I just, even though I'm a non-Catholic, I'm an Anglican, and we have ties to the Catholic Church in a way, it really makes me angry to realize that the liberals are not going to get any further by attacking the church and attacking God.
Well, here's what one thing you need to understand. The evangelical Christians will attack the Catholics just as much as anybody will, or more.
And that is regrettable.
It is. They're all basically members of the same brotherhood. However, there's fights and squabbles between Christian churches as well, and so it shall be from now until the end of eternity, or until eternity, you know, whatever. That's the way it always has been, always will be. They can't get along. My God, even over at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, they've actually had fist fights between the Orthodox, the Coptics, and all of them, who's going to take over and run it this day and so forth. It's just it's an ongoing thing, and
it's a pity we can't be brothers in Christ.
That's right. They just and everybody in religion needs to respect one another and leave well enough alone if you're going to offend your brother with something.
And don't call people names and things like that. I mean, because I mean, when you start calling people Nazis and stuff, I mean, you remember Kurt Waldheim, who used to be Secretary General of the UN?
Yes.
He was involved in some type of questionable action in the Crimea,
yes,
when he was in the German army.
He was.
I don't know if he was in the SS or was he in the Wehrmacht?
I don't think he was in the SS, but you know, most of the criticism of the Catholic Church really comes from the term when Pius the 12th. A lot of criticism on his actions during the war.
He could have certainly done more, but
he could have.
He was a papal nuncio in Berlin and had close ties with the Germans, and you know, Hitler signed the Concordat with him, but of course now Hitler, what he said, he was going to have the church reeling on the ropes as soon as he could get around to it. He would have blown Pius right out of the Vatican if he had his way, you know?
Sure.
But I mean, there have been many sins, and I look at it this way, and I'll let you go. Whenever you have greatness and great organizations made of men, you have great error. And sometimes we have to be able to forgive and go on, and not call each other names. That's my only point.
Well, I agree. Although I'm just as guilty as the next guy on calling names now and then. Now and then I lose it. So, hey, I do thank you for calling in, Jim. Thank you very much for your call.
It's a good show. It really is. It's balanced, and it's, you basically keep things in an even keel. You don't yell, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. We try. Thanks very much for your call.
Buddy. Have a good day.
Yes, sir. All right. We start off the show talking about religion today. I don't know if it's on my list of things to talk about today. How about good old Don Imus? Did you see where he was calling Al Gore names and so forth? Don Imus. I would like for anybody to explain to me what it is that Don Imus has ever done in his career, ever, anything. He's one of those things in showbiz that I don't understand. I don't get it. I really just don't get it. I know we all have our personal preferences, and that's fine. And if he didn't have ratings, he wouldn't be where he is today. But he's just one of those people that I have never been able to, quote, get. I don't get the Don Imus thing. And here he is calling Al Gore names today. I didn't like it. In Chicago, they're fighting for better wages. If you work for a big corporation with one of the big box stores, they're calling for a $10 an hour minimum wage with at least $3 worth of benefits per hour. So what do you think about that? That's an interesting story. We'll talk about that perhaps a little later on in the program today. And I am so disappointed. So disappointed today. I can't tell you. I've been in a funky mood ever since I heard this morning. The FBI has given up their search for Jimmy Hoffa. They are. All this week, I've been just, with as they say, bated breath, whatever that means. I've been waiting with this bated breath, on them to find Jimmy Hoffa and put this story, if you will allow the pun, to rest. I was hoping they would find him. I thought it would make a good story with a happy ending and all, but it is not to be. The poor little town up in Michigan, they won't be able to sell those cupcakes anymore, and all the excitement will be gone. Well, too bad, too bad. Hey, I do want to ask you, somebody asked a question on one of the big websites today. I forget where it was, as I was surfing around. Do you live above or below your means? Good question. I wrote down some of the questions they asked. Did you buy the house, car you could afford, hope to afford, or afford if you have financial setbacks? How does your savings look? Put anything away for your retirement yet? If you lost your job, now here's a great question. If you lost your job, what excesses could you trim? And how long would you last before financial disaster? And after reading about the record, and it is turning into a record now, record number of foreclosures around the country because of the fact of so many people getting sucked in on those very attractive ARM mortgage rates a while back. House payments are soaring, and people are going into foreclosure, and what a shame it is. A lot of people... The way I see it, there are a lot of people living above their means if they're eating nowadays or having clothes on their back, what with medical and housing and energy costs just going right through the roof. There really isn't room for anybody else. So I do know many, many people that are living above their means just for having decent food on the table. Food that they really can't afford right now because of having a roof over their head and enough clothes on their kids' back to go to school and so forth. What a mess we are in this country right now. And it's one of the things we want to talk to Professor Campos about in a few minutes. What can we do about the situation we're in with the great middle class disappearing? It is a terrible mess. Just a ugly, ugly, ugly mess. I feel bad about it. I really do. Don't know what the answer is. I wish I knew. And came across one of these stories that just cannot be true. It cannot be true. You've all heard about the new White House policy expert, Zinmeister. I thought that was an interesting name for a guy to go be working at the White House, Zinmeister, so close to Spinmeister. A magazine editor who was named a top White House policy post, Carl Zinmeister, altered, and doesn't this sound familiar, altered his own quotes and other text in a published newspaper profile of him posted on the website of the magazine he's edited for more than a decade, The American Enterprise. I am so shocked that somebody going into the Bush administration would do this. I am so shocked. He's edited The American Enterprise magazine for more than a decade, and they had all this text up there in newspaper profile of him. And in response to queries from the New York Sun yesterday, the White House said all of the changes, in typical White House fashion, all of the changes were to correct errors in the August 2004 article, which was written by Justin Park and published in a weekly newspaper, the Syracuse News-Times. These were corrections that were made due to misattributions or misunderstandings by the reporter that were cleaned up when they were reposted, a White House spokesman, Ginny Memo, said. Mr. Park and his editor, Molly English, rejected that explanation and said, if there's an inaccuracy, he should have called me or he should have called Justin, Miss English said. She said it was unethical for Mr. Zinmeister to post an altered version of the story without permission. It's reprehensible, frankly, Miss English said. Once this is published, it is not his property. From that point in time, he can't just pick and choose. The Sun yesterday republished a quote from the original New York Times story in which Mr. Zinmeister, who lives and works in upstate Cazenovia, expressed his antipathy for the nation's capital and its denizens, saying, people in Washington, now remember, this is the new policy meister in the White House, he wrote this, people in Washington are morally repugnant, cheating, shifty human beings. The Syracuse Weekly quoted him as saying, however, in the version posted on the American Enterprise site, his quote reads differently and sweeps less broadly. He says, I learned in Washington that there is an overclass in this country stocked with cheating, shifty human beings that's just as morally repugnant as our underclass. The revised article said, oh, my, 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 caught with the proverbial pants down. Will that be the end of the story? Will it? Will they just let it go at that now? I wonder. And, of course, we have the story that I just read about today. I knew nothing about this today. I find it terribly puzzling because, as most of you, I'm sure, I remember Mr. Bush saying that as the Iraqis stand up, we will stand down. Did he not say that? Of course he did. Many, many times. And his people have all repeated that little phrase many, many times. And did he not say that we're making remarkable, and I'm using his words, remarkable progress in training Iraqi troops and Iraqi police forces? And did not the General Pace, for example, say that we're making, quote, remarkable progress in training Iraqi soldiers and police units? And most of the generals over there bragged about the remarkable progress we're making. So as they stand up, we can stand down. Would anybody like to explain to me then why we sent 1,500 more troops, American troops, stationed in Kuwait, sent them into Iraq this weekend if things are going so well with training these troops that are supposed to be standing up? As I understood it, these troops of theirs are doing so well that we would be able to begin withdrawing troops. And Mr. Bush himself said that not so long ago. And here we are sending more troops in to help quell the extraordinary violence that is now taking place in southern Iraq, where there wasn't any big violence not so long ago. What is happening here? What is happening? Stay the course. Stay the course. You know, that is a saying that I think will go down in history. like with Mr. Reagan saying no, or Mr. Bush 1 saying no new taxes, no new taxes. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Stay the course. Stay the course. So this is the course. Sending more troops into Iraq now. More of our troops into harm's way. After telling us the Iraqi troops are doing so well and taking command in many of the terrorist situations that our troops find themselves in now, that the Iraqi troops have stepped forward and stepping up their end of the bargain, and then we send up 1,500 more troops. Something, as they say, is rotten in Denmark. Something smells here. Does it not smell to you as well? I'm sure it does. Oh, my. And Afghanistan? Afghanistan, as we speak, is exploding. Just exploding with violence all over the country. It's going backwards, folks. Afghanistan is going backwards. We had our troops in there. We could have taken the control of that country. But Mr. Bush was far more interested in starting the Bush War in Iraq, which he did, and pulled everybody out prematurely. And we are left with a terrible, terrible mess in Afghanistan right now. A terrible mess in Afghanistan. We have no control over that country. The only place where there is any safety at all is in Kabul. And not all of Kabul is safe now. And we have these riots taking place yesterday because of American troops slamming in and killing several Afghanis. Because of now the Pentagon saying the brakes went out on one of the Humvees is what caused the whole mess in the first place. Man, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse with those two countries, doesn't it? I'd love to see some good news coming out of there. And then we have the terrible massacre story coming out of Iraq. As Murtha said, it's going to be ugly. And as one of the Pentagon hierarchy has said, it's going to be an ugly story. From what we know already, it already is an ugly story. And the question I would put to our listeners today, are these people that commit crimes like that, and we will say alleged crimes like they're being accused of, because we know they haven't been convicted yet. But are these people who are accused of doing such things, are they doing these because that's the kind of people they are? Or are they doing these things because that's the kind of pressure they've had put on them? I wish I knew. I wish I knew what happens when a Lieutenant Calley, like in My Lai, goes in a village and helps massacre 500 people in Vietnam. What happens when somebody in a unit snaps and they go in and kill possibly 24 innocent Iraqis as though their lives are worthless? And the thing that troubles me is there's so many people on the right who defend this sort of action. Yes, they do. They do defend it. Act as though those lives are somehow worth less than our lives. I have never understood that. I don't think I ever will. That my life is worth any more than another human being on this planet, any decent human being. I do not understand that, and I do not understand how any human being feels that way. I know they do. And I know the right looks down upon the brown-skinned people in the Middle East. We hear the racism come through. We hear it. We hear the Muslims, even innocent Muslims, taken to task for being Muslims in this country. I received a terrible story in an email the other day talking about how things were so bad in Europe now with the Muslims taking over and what is France going to do and so forth. I'm really tired of that. I am really, really tired of that. And the right defends that constantly. So, did these men, if they did this, Did they do this because they had a natural propensity to do so? Or did they do so because of the extraordinary pressures put on them by the awful things that they've seen in this war? I wish I knew the answer to that. I really do. I think we're going to take a break right now. We're going to get a hold of our guest, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Didn't know I was an American for choosing to give a damn, or unpatriotic for daring to take a stand for what I believe in. Looks like freedom to me, expressions of liberty, wanting our America to be responsible hegemony. Didn't know I was a communist for wanting to share the wealth. It doesn't take an economist to measure the cost of health and what I believe in. Looks like heaven to me, one human family, where everybody's got enough to eat and something warm to cover the feet. Terrorist for daring to speak my mind. It's becoming more precarious for failing to toe the line in what I believe in. Sounds like freedom to me, like the Sons of Liberty in 1773. Dumping 45 tons of tea. Didn't know I was in the minority. All people who love the earth, I hope it becomes a priority before it gets any worse than what I believe in. Looks like heaven to me, where angels take the shape of the tree, giving us clean air to breathe, from the rivers to the mountains and streams. Hated my country for acknowledging the truth. This war is despicable profiteering at the expense of our youth. And what I believe in looks like heaven to me. All of humanity living as community.
We're not going to play around. We do have your phone. And if you say anything untoward, obscene, or anything like that, we'll contact your local authorities and you will be held accountable.
What, you ill-mannered sack of crap?
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
And we're back. And as promised, we are We have a guest along with us today. We wanted to discuss this problem that I think so many millions, tens of millions of Americans are deeply involved in right now, whether they want to be or not, the widening gap between the rich and poor America in America. And we have as our guest today Paul Campos, who is a juris doctor, is a professor at Colorado University at Boulder. Paul, are you with us?
I'm here.
Very, very glad to have you along with us this afternoon. I was reading a column you had in the Rocky Mountain News not so very long ago, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, maybe 3 weeks ago, over this widening gap that seems to be taking place at an ever-increasing pace in the country. What's causing it, and is there a way out of this right now?
Well, what's causing it is a combination of two things. One is just structural economic factors that are rewarding people at the top of the economic pyramid at a disproportionately high rate in comparison to everybody else, but also something that's very much within the control of public policy, which is tax policy. The tax code has gotten progressively less progressive over the course of the last 30 years. Not always, but that's what the general trend has been. And so you now have a situation where we essentially don't have a progressive tax code in this country at all. You know, people are under the impression that, you know, rich people pay a higher percentage of their income in taxes than everybody else, but that's just really not true. I mean, if you look at the richest 1% of Americans, they pay on average about 33% of their income in taxes. The other 99%, everybody else, pays an average of about 29% of their income in taxes. So that's, you know, that's technically progressive, but just barely. In other words, you've got a tax code which really has the people at the very, very top paying the same percentage as the average percentage paid by everybody else, and that has led, along with some other things, to this situation where the median American family in the United States makes barely more money than it did, adjusted for inflation, than it did 30 years ago, while the people at the very top of the pyramid are making vastly more. Their income has more than doubled in real terms over the course of the last 30 years.
Well, let me ask you a question. Yeah, you mentioned about it barely being equal progressive, and barely being progressive at all. I spoke to a gentleman the other day. I didn't speak to him. I heard him speaking to a group. And he had mentioned that he made $1.6 million last year and was bragging about the fact that he paid no income tax. Now, I know probably some of that is a result of having a good accountant. When you're talking about paying a certain percentage of the wealthy folks paying a certain percentage of their income, is that the percentage that is on paper that they should pay if everything was just right, or is that what they actually are paying?
Well, I think that's what they actually do pay when you go through all the numbers. It's actually quite difficult to avoid paying taxes altogether, although people do have, you know, creative accountancy and those sorts of things. But I think what's more important to focus on, rather than tax dodges or tax fraud, is what's perfectly legal to do, which is, first of all, you know, the guy who makes $1.6 million a year, it's important to realize that, first of all, he pays Social Security on only the first $90,000 of that.
Correct.
So
yeah,
he pays Social Security on almost none of his income. A lot of his income is probably in the form of capital gain, because people, you know, at the very top who are making the most money, a lot of their income comes from capital investment. Capital gains tax rates are much lower than income tax rates. So in other words, we tax income that is derived from capital at a much lower rate than we do income that is derived from labor. Naturally, people who are living off their capital tend to be far richer on average than people who are living off their labor. So that's another way in which the tax system is weighted against working people and ordinary Americans, and weighted very much in favor of the wealthiest among us.
I'm going to ask a silly question. We hear about the white-hot economy right now from our politicians, on certain politicians anyway. How should I put this? Are there statements in that direction that way because they actually believe this, or is it purely political, and do they know, do they understand the suffering that's going on in middle and lower class, poorer class Americans right now, and they're just trying to make a political hay off of this?
Well, I think that kind of a question is very difficult to answer with a sort of flat yes or no. I think the truth is probably that it's a combination of things that are going on. There are some people who probably sincerely feel that the economy is really in great shape. I mean, if you are rich, if you're at the top of the economic pyramid in the United States, then the economy is in great shape. I mean, this is a great time to be rich in the United States. There's no question about that.
Well, we hear him, if I can interrupt, we hear him bragging about how well the stock market's doing.
Right.
And yet, for average Joe and Sally American out here, that doesn't mean diddly. Maybe I've got my figures wrong, but I came across some figures recently that said the top 1% of people in Americans' wealth ratings own 49% of the value of all the stock in the United States. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah, sure. That sounds roughly correct. I mean, I believe something in the neighborhood of 17% of Americans own stock individually. Now a much larger percentage have stock ownership through retirement plans, 401ks, and things of that sort. But nevertheless, individual stock ownership is limited to really the top sixth or seventh or so of the economic pyramid. And then a huge disproportionate amount of that is located in the very richest people in the United States. So it's really fairly easy for a person who is doing quite well and who is near the top of the economy to live under the impression that everybody in America is doing great. And actually, I hear this all the time from people who claim, oh, well, but if you look at what a middle-class American can afford now, he can afford, you know, he can afford this really nice TV set and an iPod and cheap long distance and all those things. Now, that's true to a significant extent, but on the other hand, we have an economy in which, while certain consumer goods have gotten much, much cheaper, relatively speaking, things like education and health care, which most people would not consider to be luxuries, unlike, say, a plasma TV screen or an iPod, have gotten far more expensive in relative terms. So you have an economy in which the middle class and the poor are not doing any better in absolute terms than they were a generation ago, and in which the most important things for most people, things like education and healthcare, have gotten much more expensive. Then, when you add to that the middle class especially is managing to tread water by substituting domestic work for paid work. In other words, a lot of this family income is maintained by having women working outside the home much more than they did a generation ago. And you have a situation where Americans are doing a lot more paid labor simply to stay even, while at the same time the very richest are far, far richer than they've ever been before, leading to all kinds of, to this great unequal distribution of wealth, which I think is very problematic from both an economic and a political point of view.
Well, and we hear all the time, and you went over that. We hear so many times from people on the right that love to say, well, the poor don't have it bad at all. They're able to afford these plasma TVs, and they've got their cell phones, and those are not the items that are sending Americans deeply into debt. It is the health care. It is the high cost of energy. It is the high cost of housing nowadays. So I live in an area where two school teachers making the average school teaching wage in the area where we live here in Southwest Florida, two income teachers in a home can't afford the average home here where we live. And so, and this is not an isolated area. There are many places around the country where that is true.
Yeah, that's quite true. There are lots of places in the country where the housing market has gotten so out of control that it becomes very, very difficult for middle-income people to afford really any kind of single-family housing. And that problem, I think, is going to be exacerbated by the fact that a lot of people have managed to get into the housing market in the last few years through these adjustable rate interest mortgages. And, of course, what happens is when interest rates start climbing, as they started climbing for the last year, you start getting a lot of defaults. So we had a 73% increase in the number of defaults over the course of the first 3 months of this year as compared to the same time last year, because people are just being driven into bankruptcy and into foreclosure by the fact that their mortgage payments are going up by often by hundreds of dollars a month.
That's a very dangerous statistic, is it not? That's a trend that, if it continues, doesn't bode well for the entire economy.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge problem because, you know, we have an economy that is based so much on constantly increasing levels of consumer spending. And if interest rates go up, then consumer spending will get choked off because so many people are so highly leveraged already. And you can have this kind of ripple effect whereby all of a sudden large sectors of the economy are simply no longer spending the money that they were spending earlier. And, of course, this leads to all kinds of ripple effects and problems throughout the economy. And, you know, I think, you know, we've been living for quite a few years now in this kind of credit card culture, both literally and metaphorically, in which people are constantly being encouraged to leverage themselves more and more for the purposes of continuing with ever higher levels of consumer spending, to the point where last year in the United States we actually had a negative savings rate. That is, the average American family actually spent more money than it took in income. Now, you know, when the government does that, it can always sell more bonds to the Chinese, at least for the present. But when individuals do that, you know, they don't have that option. And so that, too, then adds to an increasingly fragile kind of economic situation. And then when you look at the fact that, you know, we have a tax policy and an economic policy that is geared towards making the rich ever richer, that's going to cause a tremendous amount of social resentment and potentially even upheaval when the middle class and the poor in this country look around and say, "Now wait a second, why are people who are making $500,000 and $1 million and $10 million a year constantly being given all kinds of breaks and goodies by the government? Meanwhile, I can't pay my credit card bills, I can't pay my child's medical bills, I can't afford a college education."
Well, yes, and you've touched on something I wanted to ask you about. I don't know if I couldn't tell from your article if somebody you really admire or not, but I'm very familiar with John Kenneth Galbraith's economic positions, and you quoted him in the article I read. I believe it was where he said about private wealth and public squalor that an increasingly wealthy America was in danger. Producing private wealth and public squalor, and I think we're at that point right now, are we not?
Yes, I think we are, and I think Galbraith lived, of course, he lived for a very long time. He wrote the Affluent Society back in the 1950s, and he just, you know, he passed away just a couple months ago. And what he lived to see was a society that has gotten just almost indescribably wealthy overall. The amount of wealth in America is just staggering. I mean, per capita, adjusted for inflation, we're three times richer than when John Kenneth Galbraith wrote The Affluent Society in 1958. But where so much of the public sphere is severely underfunded, and in where we just put all kinds of things, we accept things that are just really kind of difficult to believe that a society that is as rich as our society could possibly accept, such as, for example, that 47 million Americans don't have any health insurance of any kind whatsoever. They have no health coverage.
Right.
You know, countries that literally aren't half as rich as the United States provide good medical care for everybody.
Yes.
So, I mean, it would be one thing if, you know, you're talking about a poor country, you know, if you ask, you know, why isn't Namibia, you know, providing health care for all of its citizens, the answer is, well, because, you know, they're broke, right?
Right.
If you look at the United States, a country of almost unimaginable wealth overall, we're not talking about providing everybody with 42-inch plasma TV screens or providing everybody with, you know, season tickets to the Boston Red Sox. We're talking about providing people with health care,
right?
With the most basic kind of good that you would think a civilized society would try to provide at least a minimally adequate level for all of its citizens.
I would think, next to national defense, if there's anything a civilized society owes its citizenry, is national health care. Going through your article, you have some astounding statistics. I'm going to give everybody the place to go look at this. But in the last 25 years, the wealthy, their income has risen from $298,000 to $631,000, the top 1%, when in fact most Americans right now are only half as well off as they were during the Carter presidency.
Compared to the rich, that's true. In other words, if you compare the average American to the richest 1% of Americans, the gap between those two groups has more than doubled since the Carter presidency, because in real terms, that is adjusted for inflation, the richest 1% of Americans are more than twice as wealthy now as they were in the late 1970s, while, again, adjusted for inflation in real terms, the average American, the median American family, is basically at the same place. I mean, the median American family was making about $40,000 a year in present dollars in 1979, and it's like $44,000 a year in 2005. So, the median American family hasn't moved at all, almost. While the top of the economy has more than doubled.
And, yes.
Another thing about this that's really perverse is that when you look at economic psychology, once you get above a fairly modest level of income, extra income does not really seem to add to people's personal happiness. So making rich people twice as rich as they previously were is leaving aside questions of social justice, just seems extremely inefficient.
Indeed it does. Indeed it does.
It doesn't really seem to add anything to the personal happiness of such people. Meanwhile, if you take a poor person, if you take a person who has a family income of $15,000 a year, and if that person should then have a family income of $30,000 a year, that makes an enormous difference to that person's well-being in all sorts of ways and in terms of their personal happiness. If you give somebody who's making $50,000, $500,000 a year, an extra $15,000 a year, it does nothing. It doesn't have the slightest effect on them. And so,
right.
We're having a social policy that's rewarding people in ways that doesn't really even seem to help them, let alone anybody else. It's really quite perverse.
It makes one wonder just how far off we are, sociologically speaking, from let them eat cake scenario. It really does make me wonder whether this can get bad enough over the next few decades to cause a revolution of sorts.
Well, I think that's one thing that people who have like no particular political commitment to social equality or towards egalitarianism in general or at all still need to be very sensitive to the fact that sociologists, historians, people who study these things all agree high levels of inequality are just bad for social stability. Leave aside the ethics of it, right? Leave aside the political morality of it. You don't want to live in Brazil because a country where there's, an immense gap between a small cadre of relatively privileged people and everybody else, because that leads to tremendous social instability. It leads to very high crime rates. It leads to the possibility of social revolution, and social revolution is something which most people would really prefer to avoid, and with good reason.
Well,
I think somebody like John Kenneth Galbraith, saw that very clearly. He said, you can't have a society in which, the rich become obscenely rich while everybody else stays in place, because that leads to among other things, great social upheaval.
Well, I think as long as we have a situation where the government can give these huge tax breaks to the rich and tell the American populace that tax cuts increase the revenues so very much that they're so good for America, especially during a war, as long as we get the public to believe that sort of thing and put up with it, we'll probably continue on with this situation. I hope not. I'm not smart enough to know what the cure is, but I certainly, along with most people who have eyes, can see, and it's you see it everywhere. I see it with my friends. I see it with acquaintances. I see the great middle class disappearing day by day, and it's a sobering prospect, and I hope somehow the brakes can be put on it. Paul, I thank you so much for being with us today. I think you're a guy we could spend hours and hours with talking about this this situation, and you have a great grasp of it. And I would encourage everybody. Do you have a website of your own?
Well, I have my personal webpage at the University of Colorado Law School, but if people want to read my column, which is syndicated by Scripps Howard, they can just go to the Rocky Mountain News website and just I'm one of their opinion columnists. So if you just go to the RockyMountainNews.com, I'm there. So if people want
okay.
stuff, they can find it on the web there.
Well, I think we appeal to Mr. Average Man on this program, and I think Mr. Average Man, as I'm always calling him, Joe and Sally American, very much would appreciate your columns. And Paul, I thank you so much for giving us a very informative half hour here on the program. We appreciate your time, and we hope to talk to you again sometime soon.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah, goodbye.
So there you have it. Are we going to be facing a let them eat cake situation some of these days soon? You hear rumblings. How much more will the people take? How much more of this will the average American take, where they sit here and see the guy making the over $1 million getting the huge tax cut, and he gets enough to buy a tank of gas? The average guy does less than a tank of gas. How much longer will that go? How much longer will you see a man making $1 million paying the same tax rate that you are? As we're, you know, and hear the right and the wealthy rail against a progressive tax. I don't know about you, and I know it goes against everything the Republicans believe in. I believe in a progressive tax. I believe that the luckier you are, the more that you have gained from this country, the more you have gained from the populace of this country, from the community, I believe you owe more. I believe you owe more. And you make more, you should pay more. I'm not saying the government needs to step in and take 90% of your income. That's wrong. But you owe more. There is no way you can justify it any other way. Oh, I hear guys like Grover Norquist and the like stand up and claim the opposite is true. That in some cases the rich should pay no taxes because, after all, they provide the jobs. And if they don't have to pay taxes, they can provide more jobs. When in fact, when they get these tax cuts, when the big corporations get the tax cuts, the corporate welfare, we like to call it, where does that money go? Does it go into more jobs? Has it gone into more jobs in the last couple of decades? The answer is no, hell no. It has gone into the pockets of the investors and the CEOs and the fat cats in the corporations. That's where it's gone. It has not gone into the wages of the people in the companies. Not at all. It has trickled up, my friends. It has trickled up. The voodoo economics of the Reagan era never happened. Never happened, never will. There is no such thing as trickle-down economics. Not anymore. Maybe at one time, maybe 40 or 50 years ago in this country, you might have been able to make a case for that, but you cannot in this day and age. You simply cannot, because the wealth does not trickle down. It is flowing upwards, and it's flowing upwards at a pace that we've never seen before in this country. We are truly at a point in American history right now, and I am wary of saying this, but it's, as you know, when guys think something, he says it. I think we're almost back to the feudal days, where we have the kings and the lords, and we have the serfs and the serfs. And you know who the serfs are. And yes, we may have a few more freedoms than we had in the Middle Ages. The serfs do. But we still have the king knocking down the door in the middle of the night. We're just now getting back to that without a warrant. We still have the king demanding his treasure for his taxes from the paychecks of people who must pay it, but not from the wealthy. We're not that far off from the way it used to be. We've made a natural progression over the centuries where things are better as they should be in a civilization. But we're not that different from feudal times when we had the serfs and the aristocracy. And we experienced it here in this country back around the turn of the century, the 1880s up to through the 1910s with the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and the Mellons. And we're about to go through it again, I fear. And I do fear that. I really do. Well, we're going to head toward the news right now. And we'll be back right after that's over. And I expect you will be here. I hope you will. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Guy James Show.
This is Quality News Network. The U.S. Supreme Court has made it harder for government whistleblowers, ruling 5-4. The public employees do not have carte blanche free speech rights to disclose government's inner workings. Writing for the majority, Justice Anthony Kennedy said the First Amendment does not protect every statement a public employee makes in the course of doing his or her job. The FBI has called off its search for the remains of Jimmy Hoffa. Agents have been digging for 2 weeks on a horse farm near Detroit. He's been missing since 1975. The death toll has now risen to more than 5,700 from Saturday's earthquake in Indonesia, where emergency help is beginning to stream in now, with tens of thousands are homeless. CBS correspondent Kimberly Dozier, who was wounded in a bomb attack on a U.S. military patrol in Baghdad that killed two British members of her news crew, is now in Germany for medical treatment. She is listed in critical but stable condition. 1,500 American Reserve troops in Kuwait have been redeployed to Iraq's volatile Anbar province to help put down a rise in insurgent attacks there. And two car bombs in Iraq today, killing a total of at least 40 people and wounding nearly 100. One of the bombs hit a popular market in a Shiite area north of Baghdad. The other one went off in a town about 60 miles south of the capital city. The investigation into the alleged massacre of 24 Iraqis by U.S. Marines in Haditha last November is just about complete, and some members of Congress have reportedly been told to brace for the fallout from potential charges of murder and cover-up stemming from that investigation. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada is being criticized for accepting a free ringside seat to a couple of pro boxing matches a couple of years ago, tickets which came from the state agency which was trying to influence Reid on the federal regulation of boxing. The House Judiciary Committee is holding hearings today on the FBI raid of the House office of a Louisiana congressman who is a target of a corruption investigation. The committee is looking at whether any constitutional issues regarding separation of powers were violated when that raid was conducted. Afghan troops are patrolling the streets of Kabul after at least 14 people were killed in anti-U.S. riots in the capital. They broke out after a U.S. military truck lost its brakes and plowed into a line of cars, killing at least five Afghans. In Houston, a who's who in American politics joining hundreds of mourners today and remembering former senator and vice presidential candidate Lloyd Benson, who died last week at the age of 85. Among them, former Presidents Bill Clinton and George Bush, former presidential candidate Michael Dukakis, along with Lady Bird Johnson, former Secretaries of State Henry Kissinger and Madeleine Albright, and former Federal Reserve Chief Alan Greenspan, among others. You're listening to Quality News Network. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
President Bush has named Goldman Sachs CEO Henry Paulson as the next Treasury Secretary, succeeding a John Snow who's retiring. Toyota says it's recalling more than 500,000 vehicles across 9 models, including its popular Prius hybrid car, to replace faulty parts that could cause drivers to lose control of the steering wheel. The cars were all built between September 2002 and November of last year. GM's recalling Corvettes for problems with the car's roofs, and Volkswagen's recalling Jettas and new Beetles for problems with brake lights. The European Court of Justice has blocked an EU-US agreement that requires airlines to transfer passenger data to U.S. authorities. Since 9/11, European airlines have been giving U.S. officials passengers' names, addresses, and credit card details. The U.S. says the data would help fight terrorism, but the European Parliament says the data could be misused. A group led by Richard Kinder has announced a buyout offer valued at $22 billion for Kinder Morgan. That's the parent of the pipeline giant he founded in 1997. The deal, which includes the assumption of about $8 billion in debt, would be the biggest management-led buyout in history and one of the largest leveraged buyouts ever. General Electric says its sales in China are expected to rise 20% this year and double within 5 years. GE says new anti-pollution laws have created a greater demand for cleaner engines and energy plants. Light sweet oil is trading at $72.35 a barrel. On Wall Street, the Dow Industrial is down 130 points, NASDAQ is down 32, and the S&P 500 is off 14. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
And welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. We're going to shift gears a little bit this hour. We've got, 54 minutes left in the hour. We're going to try and keep you informed and entertained during this hour. I do want to speak a little bit about a book in a little while, Crashing the Gate. I know most of you have heard about the book. I hope you will read this book. If you are a Democratic activist and you plan on doing something about the election this coming fall, starting now, you must, I mean must, absolutely must, before you do another thing, read this book, Crashing the Gate. Must reading. Let me just give you a couple examples of a few things that says in there. You know, they're talking about some of the things the Republicans are talking about. This country's going so far to the right that you won't recognize it. Hunter Thompson, back in 72. Was he kidding? No. The Democratic Party for too long has been a group of constituencies instead of a party. Howard Dean. I don't get it. When a consultant, this is so true. This is so doggone true. I don't get it. When a consultant on the Republican side loses an election, we take him out and shoot him. You guys, the Democrats, you just keep hiring him. And man, ain't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? And a real good one from Rob Stein, co-founder of the Democracy Alliance. If you live in Peoria, Illinois, and you're a conservative business guy, you pick up the Wall Street Journal and you read the editorial page, and you get your stem cell, your Social Security, or your tort reform message. If you're a pickup truck driving, beer drinking 27-year-old, you flip on Rush Limbaugh on the radio. If you're a soccer mom, you watch Bill O'Reilly on Fox. An evangelical listens to Pat Robertson. So every single one of George Bush's voters in Peoria, every segment on any given day can watch, read, or listen to their daily message. This book is full of gems. This book is full of information that you have got to read. Those are your orders. Everybody get that book, Crash the Gate. You've got to read it. Once in a while, it pays to step away from the current situation and take a look at the big picture. And that's what I want to do for a few minutes before I take any more phone calls. During the past year and a half or so, there have been more political events take place than during any other comparable time that I can remember in my lifetime, anyway, in my political life. One story after another, they come and they go with almost predictable regularity nowadays. They come and go with such speed that the news media encourages us to forget yesterday's stories or even the last hour story and look at this new one. You know how it goes. I mean, your head spins. The 24-hour news cycle on cable TV causes us to look at every little political detail, whether we want to or not. I almost think we get half buzzed by the whole thing. You know, kind of immune to it all. It's a ridiculous situation when you think about it. Look back at November 2004, for example. Of course, we all remember that the election was very close and that Junior Bush supposedly, defeated Kerry by a tiny margin, with my former Buckeye State swinging the whole thing, just like where I live now, Florida did in 2000. Jeez, lucky me. But this time, Junior Bush also won the popular vote, although the margin was very, very tiny indeed. And that's officially I'm talking about, not what we think might have happened. So with this in mind, or out of his mind, Junior Bush took to the stage. And I know you'll remember, he got up and declared that by winning this election so easily that he had amassed a huge amount of political capital, and he was going to use it to buy any and all of the political toys that he had ever dreamed of. And actually, the ploys his advisor had dreamed of, because it's really hard to imagine Junior Bush dreaming of anything other than riding his bike and yelling yee-haw while driving his pickup truck around his so-called ranch. Well, Georgie Boy spent all of his political capital, and then some. He even went to the bank and borrowed even more capital. To spend it just like, he was doing by borrowing the money to spend it in Iraq. He knows how to borrow political capital, too. That little conflict going on in America, America seems to have forgotten about all that. They really do. We forget so damned easily nowadays. During the 2004 campaign, Junior Bush kept himself totally insulated from anyone who might disagree with him on any issue. You know how careful they were with him. They didn't want that dang public to see what he might not know, and that he might not know what the hell he was talking about. And he especially didn't want anybody disagreeing with him on anything. He doesn't like that, you know. And he always showed up, and this just drives me nuts. He always shows up with a large crowd of these adoring fans who sat behind him when he was at the podium, and they all looked like they'd taken had a doobie out back or a handful of Valium or some other ameliorating drug while he spoke. They do look like that. And come to think of it, you'd have to do that to sit there and listen to him and not wince once in a while, wouldn't you? I mean, these people didn't even blink. Watch them. Got that grin on their face. So the public, I wonder if they are passing on big doobie back there when we're not seeing it. Anyway, so the public sitting at home on their sofa, they always saw him with these, these adoring fans at these large gatherings with these banners behind him. And they figured if Junior Bush has got that kind of charisma, he must be quite a guy. Just absolutely lovable. The TV camera just, look at that guy. Isn't he nice? All the people like him. The psychological ploys used by the Bush people, with the banners behind him at every moment he speaks and the Stepford-like crowds, is just magnificent. I mean, they've proven over and over and over again that indeed you can make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Only the people watching and listening know Bush really is still a sow's ear, but they've been tricked into watching that bouncing ball instead of actually what's going on. But then there was that other Bush team out there smearing and tar and feathering Kerry at every possible moment. They were damn good at it, and Kerry's people were just pitiful at defending themselves from it. What, I hear Kerry defending now, defending the Swift Boat thing, and that's all well and good. John, go for it. I'm glad you are finally doing something. But, I've seen people saying, well, he did defend himself. Let me ask you this. As a bunch of political activists listening to this show right now, what would have been wrong, and I don't care, you're going to think I'm a little rough, but what would have been wrong with John Kerry going on TV just one night during that campaign and saying, I'm not going to put up with the lies and distortions of these evil sons of bitches for another minute, and just laid into Bush's own military record right then and there? What would have been wrong with that? But no, his advisor said, no, you can't, we can't go out and talk bad about Mr. Bush, and we don't want to bring more attention to your record because they'll just hit us again, and please don't let them hit us again. Please don't let them hit us again because we don't know how to defend ourselves because we're a bunch of friggin' wimps. That's what his advisor should have said. I was in his office the day following his victory at the Iowa primary, the Iowa caucus. I was there. I was in his office. And you should have seen the smug SOBs in his office. And, well, of course we won. You know, the pros walked in and took over that thing. That's why we won. We were the pros, and the rest of them were just the amateurs. Pros, my ass. I've never seen a more amateurish campaign than the John Kerry campaign. I think John Kerry is a wonderful man. I think he was totally competent to be president of the United States. I believe he was so ill-advised in that campaign as to have been criminal on the parts of the people that were running his campaign. I know how it must be. I know how busy the man must be that's running, working on speeches, working on ideas and so forth. And I know he sits there and listens to advisors, and they tell him to do this and tell him to do that, and he listens to pollsters. But that would have been a time to take all of their papers and flush them down the toilet. The psychological ploys used by the Bush people with their banners behind them every minute and all that, it beat Kerry to death. It really, you know, when I went in there and saw Kerry's people talking about the pros came to town, well, compared to the Bush campaign people, the Kerry campaign people were the rank amateurs. Rank amateurs. And it's true what they say in that book. Absolutely true, Crashing the Gate. The Democrats, when they lose campaign, you know, Republicans, when they lose, they fire the guys in charge of it. But the Democrats just turn right around and hire them again and put them on the TV stations as Democratic political strategists. If I see Donna Brazile on TV one more time being touted as this genius political strategist, I'm gonna put my foot through the TV. I cannot stand it when I see that. And Joe Lockhart. Nice people both. I mean, nice people. But my God, they were total, complete failures in their campaigns. Complete failures. And I'm sorry if some of you people listening out right now worked with them. I don't care. They were losers. They were losers from day one. A campaign should not have been close. The Republicans shouldn't have had a chance to even steal it from us, which they did. Oh, man, it gets me going when I think about that. But I probably would have destroyed my campaign had I been John Kerry, and I would have, and I guarantee you I would have, and you know I would have, gone on TV and said, I'm not going to take it from these Swift Boat sons of bitches anymore. And I would have said it exactly like that, just like Harry Truman would have, and he'd have put up a fight instead of being advised not to. And I think America would have respected him for it. Well, spilt milk. We all know how it turned out, and it has been a disaster that most of us predicted it would be. Even worse, if you ask me. But what Junior Bush didn't count on, I think, was just how damn crazy the zealots who put him in office actually are. I don't think he and his people really thought that Falwell, Robertson, Dobson, and the rest of the religious lunatic fringe would actually demand their pound of Bush flesh and do it so publicly as they're doing it right now. And man, are they ever. These people want their religious laws to be made into secular laws for all of us to live by. They want the gays, the lesbians, the atheists, the abortion right people, anybody who doesn't think there should be morning, noon, and night prayer in schools to be put in stocks in the town square and get 40 lashes if they don't repent their evil ways. And that's the scary truth. They want creationism to be made the foundation of scientific studies in school, and they sure as hell want the American military to continue to fight and die in Iraq and the entire Middle East to take care of the unfinished business of the Crusades. They are serious about these being the end times, and they just don't give a damn about anything past tomorrow, including the environment. Does anyone really know what Junior Boyce was thinking when he pandered to these religious nuts? That's not an indictment on religion. As I've always said, faith is wonderful. It's the religion that's caused the problem. Did he not know that if he was given the chance, these people were given the chance, they'd all have us wearing black floor-length clothing and dunking sinners into the lake to see if they drowned or not, because if they didn't drown, they were of the devil? Did he not believe that Falwell would place himself on a throne and declare that the Salem witch trials would now resume, and that he, Falwell, would determine what is moral and what is not? Did he not know that? And who knows what he was thinking when he decided to kick their asses to the curb and continue on with spending his political capital any old way he wished without their blessings. They were amazed. They were shocked. He was going to change Social Security to suit himself rather than anyone else. And in reality, all he was going to do in his Social Security scam was to have people saving for their own retirement instead of having a common insurance fund. He went out in the stump and he tried to scare hell out of all the people who are retiring or retired soon in order to get his way. And it didn't work because the majority of Americans figured out that they could already do this on their own by depositing their money into an IRA account. And they also figured out that the safety net of the Social Security system for those not able to make it would be gone. And they ended up laughing in his face over it. His own people. I think this was the beginning of the end for Junior Boyce. Once the Stepford Republicans realized that the Social Security scam wasn't going to happen, they turned their backs on Junior Boyce, who ignored them and went right on stumping for his stupid plan. And as so often happens with this man, the more he spoke about it, the more ridiculous and totally weak he looked, even to his formerly solid base. They finally saw the cracks in his plastic armor. Finally, the majority of these formerly hypnotized Republicans saw that Junior Boyce was the idiot many of us knew he was all along. We tried to warn them, but they didn't listen. So they are every bit as responsible for this mess as is Junior Boyce. His asinine stay the course message wore thin. And now Republicans are starting to say, yeah, right. So now, he was in a real pickle when a gift from heaven landed right in his political lap, a chance to redeem himself with the religious kooks when Sandra Day O'Connor said that she was going to retire. Hallelujah. Junior was going to save his legacy and win back Falwell and the rest of the over-the-edge religious nuts. They were after something they could present to their folks on Sunday morning to prove the Bushy boy was their guy and that they had not wasted their votes after all on some lying Republican politician who didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground. They had John Roberts waiting in the wings for just this moment. They had him all shined up and ready to go. John Roberts, who would do the evangelicals' bidding, get rid of Roe v. Wade. He was going to move right into the Supreme Court right now. The only thing is, when Rehnquist died, it kind of threw a monkey wrench into the process. And Junior now had to come up with another appointee. And true to form, he chose none other than Harriet Myers, who was nothing more than a glorified White House secretary in the eyes of the religious right. The religious right went nuts over her appointment, and Bush suffered yet another rebuke and another defeat from these people. It was getting really, really ugly. It was a really bad move, and the far right was now figuring out that what the Democrats had been saying about Bush all along was absolutely true. He operates solely on cronyism, whether the people like it or not, whether his appointees are qualified or not. It doesn't make any difference. That's the deal. So now that Harriet Meyer's name is back there alongside the Edsel somewhere, we can see that Bush's lies are just piling up like cordwood in the winter in Vermont. His pals used to give him the benefit of the doubt concerning his lies, but no more. They're no longer able to conveniently forget one lie after another. They now saw through his stupendous lies, and when he said he hated people leaking but didn't do a damn thing about it, when his office poured out leaks by the bucketful concerning Valerie Plame and Joe Wilson, he even tried to cover up the whole thing by hiring, you know, an investigator, someone to investigate the leaks. That ought to make him look good, right? Well, not quite. Seems the guy he chose to get to the bottom of the matter actually plans to get to the bottom of the matter. Strange, huh? When Libby was indicted, anyone with a brain knew right then and there that Bush knew all along who the leaker was. This was the last straw for many of the right-wingers. And then there was the little matter of Tom DeLay having found himself in a little bit of hot water by breaking Texas election laws, and being pals with Jack Abramoff was coming out in the open along with the news about the Dukester Cunningham. And people were beginning to see that it wasn't only the Republican White House that was filthy with corruption, but the Republican Congress as well. Especially when the public got the facts about DeLay's K Street project. That one is a beaut. And then along comes Katrina. And there has probably never in the history of our country been a more graphic example of governmental failure and incompetence of an administration than was their response to this disaster. In September and October, two hurricanes hit the Gulf Coast. And because the Bush administration and the Republicans' goal of smaller government aid agencies, FEMA, was being left to slowly bleed to death from lack of funding, and by appointing a political hack to be FEMA director, the agency was given less power, which took away the agility the agency once had during the Clinton administration. FEMA now had a director without an emergency relief experience trying to communicate with the president through the Homeland Security director. It didn't work. It was a total disaster from start to finish. And once again, as is always the case with this administration, it was rife with corruption from the very beginning. The Republican money-grubbing vultures were in the area as soon as the storm blew out, and they reaped billions, billions of dollars in ill-gotten rewards from this totally corrupt administration. But even now, there are still around 29% of the people who refuse to accept the brutal truth that our government is under the iron-fisted control of a would-be dictator who doesn't have both oars in the water and tells us God is telling him what to do. I'll tell you this, God never told me or anyone else I know to do the things like Bush has done. These 29% they're content to stick their fingers in their ear and close their eyes and start with a la 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 I can't hear you number. And I haven't even mentioned the debacle in Iraq yet, but that isn't necessary because last week Karl Rove conceded that the war was a weak point. He told us that the American people don't like President Bush because of the war in Iraq. And I'm sure there are many people who don't like the president because of the war in Iraq, but they didn't like him long before now. They didn't like him when he broke international law and invaded a sovereign country. They didn't like him when he killed thousands of innocent Iraqis in his invasion. He didn't like him when he put American soldiers in harm's way without a legitimate reason, and the action was in the self-defense of our country. But these people felt this way 3 years ago. Karl Rove is finally coming around to believe it, to know it, and to acknowledge it. Well, I was just trying to bring all these facts back into focus because with the quantity of information, it is really difficult to remember the big picture. There are so many other things that we could mention. Dick Cheney, the shooting incident. And we also have the bravery of many people who opposed this administration and did their part to expose the hypocrisy of the Republican Party. I believe that these people did their part. Of course, we all need to keep the pressure on. Every time that the opposition lets up, the Republicans declare victory. You know that. My message to all liberal Democrats who are laying bare this administration for all to see is to stay the course. It'll work for us. It's working now. The people are finally starting to wake up to the truth. We have to stay the course. We have to stay the course and keep the pressure on these people. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back to the phones.
Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid. We didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided they can't do that. That we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg, and God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice. The Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
Oh, it's true. It's true.
Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
And don't you just love the way he even loves to rub it in your face? Some people call you the elites. I call you my base. You know what he was doing when he said that? He might as well have had the cameras from CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN, Fox Network, all the TV networks right there. Might have had them all right there with the cameras on him and stood right there and give the finger to the rest of America. Because that's what he said right there. When he said, some people call you the elites, I call you my base, screw the rest of America because you're the only people that matter to me. That's exactly what he was saying with that statement. Am I wrong? I don't think so. You got a chance to let me know if I am. 866-546-5254. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yes, sir. Listen, I just want to tell you something. The way you've explained the situation, I haven't liked what I've heard, but I can't disagree with you. You've done it with symmetry, you've done it with accuracy, and you've done it with a great deal of institutional knowledge. And I think that other liberal talk show hosts would do well to follow your lead in pursuing your format and having their facts together and not, you know, using ad hominem arguments or yelling and screaming. Not once have you done that. You just hit it right to where it needs to be hit. And I really appreciate that. I can relate to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so very much. I appreciate your comments. I really do.
I don't want you to feel like a pancake that's been smothered with syrup, but I mean, really, I've heard a lot of people talk, and they say a lot of crazy things, and a lot of them are inimical to the interests of what you're trying to present. But you hit it right on the head, and you do so with accuracy, and, you know, your format is superb.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate your comments. I really do. I was going to say something there, and I forgot what it was. I think I got a monitor turned up just a little bit too high in here. There we go. I believe what I say, and I think you all know that I'm not a showman. Let's see, who's my favorite actor? Jack Nicholson, yeah. That's how well I know Hollywood. I like Jack Nicholson. I think he's a really good actor. But then I hear Jack Nicholson say that he's not an actor at all. That's just him in the movies. And what you see is what you get. And I got to tell you that that's what you're getting right here. And everybody that knows me could attest to that. I can sit back and be Mr. Nicest Guy in the World sometimes, and not very often. But then again, I can get slightly upset in a moment's notice. Usually not only over anything trivial. Hoping not. I'm a lot better than I used to be, though. We do mellow with age, don't we? Ah, yes, we do. Thank goodness we do mellow with age. In talking about Bush and his situation over the last few years, it's just not hard to talk about it because it has been an unmitigated disaster for this country. You know it. I know it. Now most of the Republicans know it, and you know that most of that 29% knows it too. They can't be that stupid. They really can't. They cannot be that stupid. I'm just having faith in them that they're not that stupid. I figure a lot of them are just stubborn enough to, when someone comes around and does a poll and asks them the question, yeah, I still believe in Bush, and because they don't want to look at their wife or their husband and look like a fool and like it changed their mind, you know, admit they're wrong. So they go ahead and they tell the pollsters when they call or show up at the door or whatever they do. Yeah, I still like George Bush. Of course I still like him. And as soon as the pollster's off the phone, that's dirty, no good. I can't admit it. I can't tell everybody that what I've been saying for the last 5.5 years is just completely stupid. I've been a proud Republican all my life, and for the last 5.5 years, I've been standing telling anybody who would listen that this George Bush is a good Christian man, that he'll do the right thing, and that he was sending our boys into war for a good reason, and that he was doing this, and he was doing that, and he's going to make this economy good, and he's going to be a great president, and he's... I told him, I can't look at him in the face now and say, my God, I was wrong on every last thing there is about him. Even Guy James can't say that he was right about everything about him. Because even he will admit that he said there's nothing good about the guy except he does dress well. And he's always said that. Yes, when people ask me if I know of any redeeming qualities of Mr. Bush, I've always said that I think he dresses right well. He wears those $3,000 and $5,000 suits very nicely. I must say, glad he doesn't wear them riding his bike, though. Some of them get tore up pretty good, wouldn't they? Ah, yes. That's a funny thought. George riding it out in his ranch with a bicycle and a pair of those $2,000 cowboy boots that he likes to wear. You know, I don't think there's anything funnier than a fake cowboy. And the funny thing is to me is... The really odd part is to me that the people in Texas also feel that way. Texans are a proud people. They really are. They love the great Lone Star State of Texas, and they don't like anybody coming in being a phony. You know, that's one of those states where you really got to be what you is. And yet they allowed him to come in there and be a fake Texan and wear his cowboy boots and everything, and then they claimed him as their own. A Connecticut boy. Who, God knows, would rather live any place but in Crawford, Texas. Oh, have you seen Crawford, Texas? My apologies to all of you good Democrats that must have to live there if you do. But have you seen Crawford, Texas? My, 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 my. I spent a year there one day. Hey, let's go back to the phone. Oh, I have to laugh every time I think about Crawford, Texas. I really do. Oh, man. Down at Camp Casey, that was really nice. And the Peace House right there in town, that was real nice. And my experience at the restaurant, if you want to call it that, that wasn't so nice. And my experience with the folks down at the Elks Club, that wasn't so nice either. I'll just leave it at that. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita from Florida.
Hi, Juanita.
I'd like to talk about a couple of spilt milks I heard last night.
Okay.
You were excellent on that situation. But anyway, one of them was during Carter's year. I know you heard about the him having the solar panels on the White House.
Yes.
And then when Reagan got in, he had them to take them off. Well, I heard a gentleman from Texas talking last night. He was, he's Public Citizen. He's with publiccitizen.org. And he said that Carter had a plan for us to have alternative energy so we could get free from the oil.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he lost the election and they just threw it away, it was sold to Denmark, Germany, and I forget what other country. And so now we get it. We have to buy it from them, which, of course, they're making a profit off, you know.
Yeah. Oh, my.
And isn't that spilt milk?
Yeah. Oh, my.
And then the other one last night I heard was free speech TV that's really good. Had a gentleman on there, he's from England, and he was head of the over in the Afghanistan and also in Iraq. He was head of the their communications and all.
Mm-hmm.
And he was such a nice, gentlemanly guy, the way he talked. And he's written a book about how we're losing the Middle East and all. And his name is Steve Tatham. And he was telling about how the difference in the way that they did was they went out and they would have breakfast with the leaders in the communities and all. And just the difference, you know, and he wasn't rubbing it in or anything, but he said that another thing that should be showed more was the soldiers when they did things for people, you know, how the people would be so grateful, you know, and hug them.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the people in the Middle East need to see that.
Yes.
But they don't.
No. No.
But anyway, I wrote him a little note last night now. And I said I could just weep thinking of all the wonderful things our country could have done in our name in the Middle East. I know many of our military wanted it so, but the leadership is so drugstore cowboy and are out of touch. I certainly am getting your book. And did you know I got a reply from him?
Oh, well, good. Good.
He says, this is short. He said, how nice of you to take time to drop me an email, and thank you for buying my book, which will appear on Amazon.com this week. I guess hindsight is a wonderful thing, but it is a worry that the U.S. reputation in the Middle East and indeed the wider world is as it is. We just need to show the world that the U.S. and the U.K., for that matter, is full of good people as well. Kind regards, Steve Tatham.
Well, good, good.
And another thing that gentleman that called from the Pyrenees, how do you pronounce the Pyrenees?
Mm-hmm.
The other day,
yeah.
Overseas. I just loved his phone call. I thought he was so great.
I was happy to hear from him as well.
Love to hear from him again.
Well, I'm sure he will call again. I'm sure he will.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Got a bone to pick. This hasn't been all pick on Republican Day. As you know, we can't get through one day without chastising a Democrat or two. That's not our mission on this program, to sit here every day and just cut down politicians. It's not our mission at all. The mission of this program is to inform everybody, and wouldn't it be nice to have a day or two where we could inform everybody just of nothing but a bunch of really great things that our Congress, that the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, and the executive branch had all done for the people of the United States. Wouldn't I love to come on this program for a solid week and talk about the news that day where it had nothing but great things that our government had done for the people of the United States of America? Wouldn't that be something? That would be a great mission to have. And I so long for that day to come. And I'm also smart enough to know that it never will. As long as men are tempted by money, as long as men reach high exalted positions in the government, they will be tempted by money, and they'll take that money, and they'll love the power and the glory and the influence and everything that it gives them, and they'll want to hang on to their jobs in Washington as long as they possibly can under any circumstances, in any way they can, any means they can, no matter how dirty politically they have to get, they'll do it. I'm not talking about everybody in Washington, but damn near everybody. Almost everybody. Even a man I admire so very, very, very much, and I think is one of the most honest politicians that I have ever known of, wouldn't you know, he's too honest for his local community. Not for his constituency. Not at all. But the local newspaper turned against him because evidently he's just a little too honest and too outspoken and, you know, for his constituency. And I'm talking about Dennis Kucinich. The Cleveland Plain Dealer newspaper, paragon of virtue that they are, formerly great newspaper, no longer, formerly one of the best investigative newspapers in America, turned their back on Dennis Kucinich, one of the most honest men in Washington, D.C. I hope they end up having to eat their words over him. I really do. What I started to say that brought this all up, talking about politicians and their missteps, and I'm not going to call this a misstep like a politician would call it, like this man's aides will call it. Harry Reid, what the hell's wrong with you? As you folks know, I am no big fan of Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi. I certainly think we could do better on both counts as minority leaders. You know, I know we could. I know damn well we could. Harry Reid, first of all, why would you take tickets worth $1,400 for a boxing match in Vegas when you were going to be ruling on the situation for the boxing commission? Why would you do that? I mean, I know why. I'm asking a rhetorical question. Why would you do that? You know, I was in an elected political position one time, and it was so very insignificant, but not so insignificant that I would even talk to somebody, a contractor, looking for a local job, wouldn't talk to them outside of chambers, wouldn't talk to them. You get invited to lunch? Absolutely not. I wouldn't take a lunch from anybody. Not a pencil, not a piece of paper, nothing. Nothing. That's the way it should be. And we find that Harry Reid takes boxing tickets, ringside seats, and oh yes, I've seen the pictures of him sitting there. $1,400 worth of tickets. So that they could influence his position on the bill. And I'm ashamed of him for doing that. He should not have done it. And it just shows me that he's no different than the rest. You can't do a thing like this and be a totally honest man. You cannot. Harry Reid knows full well that the honest and ethical thing to have done in that position would to have been look the guy in the eye and say, no, I know what you're trying to do. I know you're trying to buy influence with me. I know you're trying to buy my vote. Take your tickets and stick them where the sun doesn't shine. That's what a real politician would do. That's what a real politician should do. But all no, We take the tickets and we go to the fight. Now he's let down his constituency by doing so. I can't imagine that most of the voters think that that's something Harry should have done. Maybe a few of them think it's okay. Oh, what's the harm? He took a few boxing tickets, you know, so what? They were ringside seats from right down front. And, you know, I mean, I couldn't afford those tickets, and Harry Reid got them for free. But, I mean, I really don't care if he does things like that. If he does things like that that we know about, what does he do that we don't know about? That's what I worry about when politicians do things like that. Harry Reid, you need to be ashamed of yourself. And if all you listening are Democrats and say I shouldn't be chastising the good and honest and forthright Harry Reid, well, that's just too bad, because I think he was dead wrong in doing this. Not only has he wronged his constituency, not only has he wronged the United States Senate, he has wronged the Democratic Party as well. And as you notice, I put America first. I put his constituency in there, I put the Senate in there, and then I put the party. That's the way, the proper order for things. The party's not above all else. I wish the Republicans would remember that. But he's shamed us. He's shamed us in a time when the Republicans are on the run from their own so-called culture of corruption, graft, corruption, everywhere you look in the Republican Party, and Harry Reid has to do this. And then we have Jefferson down in New Orleans. Man, what I wouldn't do, I've always said they're outside of the Senate and the House and the Supreme Court, outside of each one of those chambers, those august bodies, should be a little white shack, about 6x6, enough room for one desk in there, and I got to be the court of common sense. Where there's somebody out there that you absolutely can't buy. They're just got nothing but good sense. Harry Reid has to walk out here and take the paper out to the little court of common sense and say, here's the paper, here's what I did. I took these seats to this boxing match. They were worth $1,400, and I took them from a lobbyist. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Reid, but you're out of the United States Senate. You see, we have ethics here. And you're out. And you should be out for that. Damn it, Harry. I just was steamed when I saw that today. I just was absolutely steamed over it. Especially now. Especially at this most important political time, maybe in the history of this country, this fool does something like this. No big deal, you say? I think it is. And Jefferson, refusing to quit off the Ways and Means Committee after Pelosi asked him to? I hope they find a way to push him off of it. I've seen enough. I do get tired of talking about the corruption of our Congress, our Senate, the White House. Next thing you know, we'll find Supreme Court's been on the take. God, I hope not. They're biased, but at least I hope they're not on the take from anybody. And we find out the White House has been planting fake news stories on TV. How low can you sink? How low can you sink? They make up these, what do they call them? VNRs, video news releases. And send them around to the TV stations like they're news, like they're actual news, when all they are is propaganda. Propaganda. What's different about that in Joseph Goebbels? What? What is different? Nothing that I can see. I really don't see any difference at all. I really don't. Our White House has been immersed in churning out propaganda ever since the first day they took office. And we find out this. And the American public looks at it and goes, well, you know, that's not so bad. that's not so bad that we've been looking at the nightly news and some of the stories we saw that we thought were actual news was just bullshit put out by the White House to make themselves look good. That's not so bad. I mean, I bet the rest of those politicians would do that. I mean, after all, they're all corrupt. Look at Harry Reid. He took those boxing tickets. Look at Duke Cunningham. Look at Traficant. Look at Tom DeLay. So whatever comes up in Washington now, you look at it and go, well. And I hear this every day. And it drives me crazy when I hear it. When I get into a conversation with something and they say this, I just have to step back for a moment and say, guy, don't respond to that. Do not respond to that. Just kind of change the subject and go on to something else. You don't realize how difficult that is for me. And I know for some of you as well, when I'll be bringing up a legitimate point of something wrong in politics and somebody says, well, they all do it. Oh, God, when they say that to me, I just want to scream, they all do it. First of all, because it's mostly true. And secondly, it gives an excuse to people to overlook serious issues with politicians. Well, they all do it. I mean, you know, the people out in Harry Reid, the people out in Nevada right now, I bet you is a dollar to a donut as I'm sitting here right now. There are people in Nevada listening to this program going, well, you know what? That's not so bad. Harry Reid took us $1,400 worth of boxing tickets. So what, guy? There's other people do that. Look at DeLay. He went on a trip to Scotland. Hell, they all do it. That's not so bad. You try going out and getting some 1,400 free tickets to the boxing match in one of the beautiful palaces there in Las Vegas. You try that. You try getting a free golfing trip to Scotland with all the luxuries that life has to give along with that trip. You try that. You try getting flown to the Caribbean on government jets. You try getting flown here and there on private jets and getting wined and dined by the lobby. You just try that once and see where you get. You go to knock on Martin Marietta's door or Boeing's door. You go knock on the door of the CEO and say, hey, by the way, I just wonder if you'd like, you know, I'd like to ride on your private jet today. I wonder if you'd like fly me out to California. Said, for what? Well, I don't know. I just kind of like to take a ride on a private jet. He took Congressman so-and-so out there and said, well, that's different. Hell yes, it's different. You were buying his vote. You don't have to buy anything from me because you already bought it from my congressman. Ah. Maybe there isn't any hope for this. Maybe there isn't. That's not true. I say that every day. I don't say every day that maybe there's no hope, but I say every day that there is. And I say every day that you and me and our friends, our birds of a feather in our group here, we will do something about it. We will change it. Because we're trying to. We're working hard at it. You and your local Democratic club, you and your letters to the editor, you and your calls to your congressman, your senator, and to the White House, you can all make a difference. And we can, and we must, and I know many of you are, and I am as well. And so we can never take the attitude that it's too late to do anything about it. We haven't reached that point yet. We might, if we don't keep our noses to the grindstone, we might just reach that let them eat cake moment that I was talking about earlier in the program today. God, I hope not. Wouldn't it be a shame that the greatest country ever on the face of the planet went down for the reasons that, I hope not. That's why we'll do everything we can to keep the truth out in front of the public every single day that we're on the air. I do thank you so much for being with us today. Doggone it, you don't know how much I appreciate you being with us every day. I honestly do. And I appreciate hearing from you, your emails. Once again, I want to invite all the new people listening to send us an email at guyjames@theguyjamesshow.com. And let us know where and how you're listening. Are you iPodding it? Are you archiving it? Are you listening live? And where the heck are you? We get some interesting mail from that little plea. So, once again, we're down at the end of the day. Want you to know I do appreciate you listening to the program. I also want you to know this is a listener-supported program. You got that? And the piggy bank gets really empty sometimes, and it would be nice to have his belly just a little bit full once in a while. So I hope you'll send in a donation to the program. You can do that on our website, www.theguyjamesshow.com. Please do that if you can. Help keep the show going. Thanks so much for listening. And as always, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. So long, and have a great day.